Welcome to Sci-Fi on Screen. I'm your host, Jeff Palermo, and this is episode 9, part 2 of Battlestar Galactica miniseries. So we're going to just jump right back in. The second half of the miniseries opens right after Colonial One and Lee Adama have apparently been destroyed, and we're looking at Adama, and he's just annihilated. He's lost his entire family, basically, now in this battle. We cut briefly to the flight deck, and Kara Thrace has landed her Viper, and it is a mess. And we see all this battle damage from the fight, and it's pretty realistic, and it looks really good. And there's this kind of mock back and forth between her and Deck Chief Tyrol about the part of her Viper. Also, Kara finds out that Lee has died. So now we cut to the Raptor and the 6 refugees with Baltar and Boomer. And sitting in the co-pilot seat next to Boomer is a little boy. And he names himself Boxy. So we get a little name check from the original series. There was also a Boxy. We see a brief glimpse of Gaius crying, and we really don't know what he's crying over. You know, maybe his humanity has been piqued as well, and he's legitimately crying over the colonies. Perhaps he's crying over his lost career. We have no idea. And he briefly sees Six in his vision, and then she's gone. Back to Galactica, they're prepping for a hyperlight jump, and we get a sense now that they haven't done this in 20 years, they need to do it to jump to a place to refuel and rearm. And there's a really great shot of the landing pods retracting into the Galactica, I guess giving it a slimmer signature for the hyperlight jump, as it were. It's a really cool scene. The jump is done, it's successful. Then we cut back to Colonial One. We realize that everyone's still alive. Basically, Apollo, you know, used the big generators in the hold of the ship to create a massive EMP pulse. It knocked out the nukes, which didn't detonate, but it made all who were scanning the area seem to think that a massive detonation had taken place, sort of hiding them. And that was successful, although Rosalyn immediately realizes it's time to get the hell out of there. And she's beginning to come to grips with their situation at this point, and she realizes she can't afford to be so completely blind to the realities of the war around them. Then we have a really nice montage to some sad music. We see Kara Thrace, Starbuck, in her rack looking at a picture of herself and Zach and Lee when they were all young. We cut to some body bags in the flight deck and a close-up. The officer walking through the body bags has a handful of Galactica's version of dog tags. We get a sense that the death toll has been quite high. The Black Galactica now is at a place called the Ragnar Anchorage. And it's basically a place where the military has storehouses of weapons and, you know, all kinds of ammunition and fuel stores. It's located inside this intense electrical storm. The deck gang, you know, goes into Ragnar and they begin to reclaim the ordnance that's there. And they find this gentleman there. His name is Leo Ban, and he's holding a gun. And he, you know, he's threatening to kill Tyrol unless, you know, he gets a ship. And, you know, from our point of view, he's a human being. He doesn't know what's happened. Finally, they kind of brush him aside. And then him and Adama are talking, and Adama's kind of bringing him up to speed on what's happened. There's this explosion. Adama sort of grabs Leo Ban, and they jump into this hatchway, which closes behind them, protecting them from the explosion, but cutting them off from the rest. And Adama's a little suspicious about this guy, and we don't know really why yet. We cut back to Colonial One. Basically, what they're doing is using the Raptors. The Raptor has a short-range hyperdrive, which we're told. So the Raptor is jumping out briefly, finding survivors, helping them jump back to the fleet, and they've gathered, you know, a decent amount of ships now. And now we're back to our ragtag fleet of the original series. And then you can see some of the ships are very similar. Some of the Tilium ships are very similar to the original series, some carbon copies. And it's great. It's a great little, you know, for fans who are rabid about the ships. So now we are with Rosalyn and the government folks, and they're on this botanical cruiser, which is a huge ship, which is mostly glass, which harbors botanical gardens. And she's having this conversation with this really small child. And it's a really beautiful scene. The child is asked, you know, who she is and where she's going. And she's headed to Caprica to meet her parents. And they're going to have dinner. And she's going to get ice cream and so on and so forth. And the viewer and everyone else around her realizes that, you know, her parents are probably dead and she's going nowhere, and this girl is blissfully innocent of anything. Our next scene, we have Rosalind and Adama talking about, basically Apollo is saying, there's a lot of ships with sublight drive and there are ships with FTL. We've got to start transferring people off the sublights because they're just not going to be a viable means of transport throughout all this. And during this moment, a Cylon raider jumps into the midst of them and then jumps away. So the clock is ticking. Apollo's advice to Laura is every ship that's equipped with FTL drive needs to jump right now. We don't have time to transfer anyone away. The Cylons will be back, you know, immediately. You have one of the PR guys there basically telling them, you can't just leave these people. This is, you know, how can you do this? And Apollo, you know, underlines that we're talking about the survival of a race here. Rosalind backs him. And there's this great scene as there, Apollo and the pilot of Colonial One are prepping for the jump. And you can hear over the comm system, the pilots of the non-FTL ships who are just, well, you can't leave us here. And the woman is like, I hope you bastards rot in hell. Like it's and they're listening to it. And Rosalind is having a very quiet scene. And it's really sinking in that they have to do this. There's this great scene between Billy and Rosalind where, in the midst of all this, Rosalind tells Billy, I have cancer, and Billy realizes he knows. You know, Laura's very human response is like, you know, our civilization is crumbling around us, and, you know, all I can think about is I have cancer, and I'm probably going to die sometime soon. You know, how pathetic is that? And Billy's like, it's not pathetic, it's human. It's a beautiful little moment. They jump, and the Cylons jump right into their midst the minute after they leave and destroy everything. The little girl that Rosalind was speaking with is on one of the sublight ships. She dies. And this is a very powerful scene, and it elevates this show because it doesn't cut away from bad choices. There's no, you know, rescue team that's going to hurry up and rescue the little girl and get back to the ship just in time for the jump, or no heroic Apollo is going to destroy all the Cylons. Like, no, they're overmatched, and they have to make these choices. And I think it's brilliant. I think it would have never made network TV. They would have been like, you can't kill a little girl on network TV. That would have been the attitude. But it's perfectly in keeping with the dire nature of the show. It's about the end of civilization and what happens, some of the emotional and military choices that have to be made during this time. And the show doesn't blink. And I think it's brilliant. So back to Ragnar. All the ships have now joined Galactica. And there's a brief skirmish between Colonel Ty and Laura Rosalind. And Ty's not about to part with any personnel or supplies for the civilians because basically the ship is about to power up and get back into the fight. Lee gets in the middle of it and he gets a couple of what they call disaster pods. And I guess it's going to help out a lot from Ty. And Ty's like, I'm only giving you these because when your old man sees you, he's going to lose it. And because right now we have this dramatic tension. Adama is sort of stuck on the Anchorage itself, doesn't know Lee's alive. So let me get a nice montage of kind of reunitings. Chief Tyrell sees Boomer. Basically, Boomer's raptor had met with the Colonials earlier on, so they were part of that entourage. So we have them reuniting and her introducing Boxy, and you get a sense that Boxy is now going to come live with them. You get the Duala and Billy seeing each other again, and then Apollo shows up, sees Starbuck. And their meeting is very restrained. You know, subtextually, they want to hug each other and cry that they're reunited. Not that they're lovers, but, you know, they have a long family history. And it's all subtext because their dialogue is very much, you know, a little snarky. They're sniping at each other, talking in the, you know, talking around everything. And it's smart. It's played really well. And it's, you know, we know what's really going on. While the Galactica's crew team is loading the munitions, Leo Ban is kind of leading Adama towards another exit from this sort of subsection that they're in. Adama basically suspects that Leoben is a Cylon. I think this is a stretch for the miniseries. The fact that Baltar is the only one who knows and how he knows makes sense. But Adama intuiting it, because, you know, simply that because of the fact that Leoben is a little pale or he has a weird coloring, but that Adama would intuit that Cylons now look like us, I think is beyond the scope of this plot, and I think it's a weak point in the show. So, but Adama is told about the immortality function, about the, you know, killing the Cylons and their consciousness waking up in a new body, and there's a physical confrontation, and Adama winds up, you know, beating him to death, and we get these intense scenes of the camera on Adama's face and blood spattering, giving us a sense of, you know, a little bit more of Adama's character. So now we cut to the bridge, and we have a conversation between Baltar and Felix Geta, and also Baltar and Six, who's invisible to Geta. And Geta, you know, there's a subtextual conversation here. Geta's telling Baltar, you know, you shouldn't feel responsible that the Cylons corrupted your code. It wasn't your fault. It wasn't like you knew. So there's a whole bunch of gamesmanship going on here. And then him and Six have this conversation. And basically, Six tells him, points out to him that there's some odd device underneath the Dreadus console on the bridge. And he recognizes it as a device that she had in her bag many times when they knew each other back on Caprica. So we get this new kind of problem presenting itself. You know, how is he going to tell the Colonials about the device without giving away his own complicity in the destruction of the 12 colonies? It's a nice little pickle. Later on, we have Apollo and Adama reuniting in Adama's quarters. You know, Lee's there, and he still can't bring himself to kind of let go, and Adama just grabs him and hugs him, and you get this beautiful shot. You're looking at Lee's head from the back of Adama as they're hugging, and there's like a beat of three. Lee's kind of holding on, and finally he just breaks down and he lets go. He's like such a flood of emotion coming out as they embrace. It's a beautiful scene. Very well played. Jamie Bamber, who plays Apollo, terrific actor. Then we cut to a discussion between Adama, Ty, and Baltar, where Adama and Ty tell Baltar ostensibly that Cylons look like human beings and he needs to come up with a way to test for the difference. And of course he already knows, so not a shock. Then they're prepping Starbuck to go pop her head above sort of the Ragnar storm to see if there are any Cylons laying in wait. And as she's prepping in her cockpit, Lee is now the CAG on the ship, so he's sort of her commander. As she's about to strap up and close her cockpit, she tells Lee that Zach, his younger brother and her ex-lover, failed what they call basic flight. And I'm assuming that is a basic course that one would take in the military, and that you would need to pass it to get to combat status. And Starbuck is telling Apollo that Zach actually failed, but because they were in a relationship together and because it meant so much to Zach, you know, because of Adama, partially, she just didn't have the heart to fail him. And so she passed him. And there's a great line when Apollo asks, "What the fuck are you telling me this now?" And she says, "It's the end of the world, Lee. It's time to confess your sins." It's beautiful. It's a beautiful little moment. So we kind of understand the ramifications of this. You know, Adama is not completely blameless, seemingly fostering the atmosphere of, you know, giving Zach love and acceptance only when he reaches a certain status in the military. So, you know, that was definitely his fault. But it's possible now we hear this that he really did not favor him so much, and that Lee's accusation that he pulled strings to get him up there, in fact, strings were pulled, but not by Adama, by Starbuck. So a very complicated thing, and I think it was really well written. So Baltar figures out that he's got to get this device off the bridge, and he sees this guy, Aaron Doral, who's the sort of PR guy that we've been following since the beginning of the show. I think he's connected to Rosalind's mission. He decides, well, I'm just, you know, this guy's been, he's a civilian, he's been walking around the bridge, I'm just going to accuse him of being a Cylon, I'll make believe the tests proved it, so, and then I'll kind of hint that he was poking around on the bridge and he was looking at this device. And so they throw Doral in the brig, you know, the stratagem works because they find this device on the bridge and he is successful. We then cut to Starbuck on her peekaboo mission. And there's some shots of her in the cockpit in the first time where we feel kind of TV stagey. Looks kind of soundstagey, you know. It doesn't look as great as everything has looked up until now. She pokes her head above the clouds, and we see this massive Cylon presence above her. We cut back to President Roslin. She's receiving Adama now in her, you know, wherever she is. And basically Roslin is like, look, the war's over. We lost. We have to get everyone we can and get out of here and go find a place to hole up and, you know, have babies and basically repopulate the species. And Adama is adamant. He's like, the war's not over. Hasn't even started yet. You know, we're going to leave you civilians here. You know, I'm a ship of war. I'm going to go look for the enemy. That's my job. You know, I'm not going to run and hide. And she's very disappointed. They break. And it looks like Adama's, you know, completely unmovable on this issue. Starbuck reports from outside the storm, and then we see Adama, Ty, Geta, and Apollo standing around debating the strategy of what they're going to do. Suddenly, Adama notices from across the room, you know, Dualla and Billy. And, you know, he can kind of tell even from that vantage point that they're kind of sweet on each other. And all of a sudden, in an incredible change of mind, he turns to the rest of the guys there and he's like, "War's over. We lost. We got to start making babies and we got to get the hell out of here." It's a quick flip and they do it very fast. I think it works. I think almost pulls it off. And, you know, later on, we'll get kind of a confirmation of why he's changed his mind. It does come off as a little abrupt, you know, and I would totally entertain criticisms that it wasn't really telegraphed in any way and that it really doesn't make any sense from Adama's character up till now. And I would kind of agree with that in some ways. But at the same time, it's just, I don't know, there's just something about the way he's looking and what he's been through so far where you get a sense that this could possibly happen. So it's not the greatest turn, but there it is. As part of this new strategy, they have to leave Aaron Doral, who's the PR guy that Baltar accused. They have to leave him on the station because they can't trust whether he's a human or not. And so they leave him there. And then they put this battle plan into action. And basically, the Galactica is going to provide cover while the ships get clear of the storm and jump to some location. The location is this place, this system, Promar system, I think. And they say something to the effect of it's beyond the red line. No one really knows what that means. You get a sense that the red line is a place in and around the 12 colonies that has not been explored yet. So nothing's really known about it. It's a cool little term. You know, it's very simple. Denotes the unknown for us. So the drums now come to bear and we're ready to come to battle. And we finally see the Galactica in battle and all of the Galactica's guns sort of unhinge themselves and point towards the base ships. And it's terrific because it's basically bullets and missiles. They basically open up because the Cylon base ships have launched this wave of fighters at the Galactica. And the Galactica basically opens up all batteries. And the camera pulls way back and we see the shot of the two big ships. And the Galactica's, you know, barrage of bullets basically shredding the Cylon fighters and pushing them back. And nothing gets through to the Galactica. It's a really cool scene. I really like it. I like the way it's shot and I like how it makes sense. Now you have the Vipers launching. You know, the battle's incredible. I mean, to think about it, the amount of ships moving, deking and firing and exploding and maneuvering, it's incredible CGI. I mean, it really is. Unfortunately, it's also shapeless. It's basically you're watching ships fight each other. You get no sense of the fight. There's no real story to the battle. But it's beautiful to look at, and it is top-of-the-line space battle. Visuals really are really beautiful. And then this, you know, some little story is put in as Lee's ship is hit. One of his engines is taken out and he's basically dead in space. Starbuck's kind of hanging around him and keeping the Cylons off, but all of the ships that the Galactica was protecting have jumped. And now it's time for all the ships to come back. And Paolo's like, "You got to leave me, Starbuck." And she doesn't. And she pulls this incredible move. The move is that she rams her ship into Apollo's. Sort of the nose of the Vipers is sort of an intake valve. You're not really sure whether it's an intake valve or whether something comes out of it, but it's hollow. And then sticking out from the Vipers' sort of, you know, dorsal wings are their guns. The hollow part of the front of her ship kind of fits into Apollo's gun, and her gun fits into the hollow part of Apollo's ship, kind of jamming them together. And it makes me just think of like someone who used to own the monogram, a Colonial Viper model, playing around with them, came up with this. It is the coolest thing that I think I've ever seen. It cements Starbuck's reputation as just like a crazy hot dog, because even Apollo's like, "What? You are insane!" You know, and she's like, "Woohoo!" She's just for all the marbles. And so she maneuvers both ships back to the Galactica, and just as the landing pods are closing, she sneaks in, and the Galactica jumps away. And it's a terrific like hot dog sequence. And, you know, the battle's not so long that you're not, you know, overdone with visuals. So, you know, the shapeless part of the earlier battle is totally forgivable because of this great little stunt. So then we cut back to the Galactica. There is a religious leader giving a speech. Everyone is assembled. You know, sort of the main military leaders are all there. And the main military personnel on Galactica are there. Rosalind is there and some other government officials. After the speech, you know, the tagline to a lot of speeches, instead of amen, like is used here, it's "so say we all." And their response to the last prayer is kind of lackluster. So Adama steps out and he demands that they say it louder and with conviction. And then he launches into the spiel that, you know, there was a legend that the 12 tribes set out from whatever lost planet they came from, and there was a 13th tribe that went and settled in another place, and it was called Earth. And it's not a legend that the precise location of Earth is known to those high up in the military command structure, and obviously they've not parted with this knowledge. So he sets up sort of the show, sets up the series. Then we have a brief scene between Colonel Ty and Starbuck. Ty enters Starbuck's quarters and basically attempts to apologize. And it's kind of quasi-smug, but it seemed because of her acrobatics with Lee saved his life. And, you know, he came there trying to make bones, like to try to make up with her. And, you know, she basically gives him the verbal equivalent of spitting in his face. And she's like, I don't like you. You're weak. You're a drunk. You're this, you're that. And she just won't have it. Like she is, you know, her character is very complicated. And you've given, it's quite a beginning to a character for a show. She has a lot of facets about her that make her really, really great. And this is another one. She's just completely unforgiving in certain ways. Then we cut to the Adama Roslyn together in Adama's quarters. And first Roslyn wants to know why he changed his mind. And Adama just sits there and looks at her plainly. And he's like, you were right, I was wrong. Let's leave it at that. Which I thought was great. You know, so you, again, you're getting a multifaceted Adama as well. He can admit to being wrong. He's not an asshole. There wasn't any subtext. You know, they didn't do any bullshit subtext maneuverings. It was very refreshing. And then Rosalind was like, there's no Earth. You made it up. And of course, he admits to her, yeah, I did make it up. And his notion of making it up was, you know, it's not enough to live, but you have to live for something. Why not let it be Earth? Then it actually was a legend of Earth, so it's not completely out of the ken of possibility. And then we see Rosalind, and her character is emerging now. She's a very canny politician. She doesn't let her emotions get in the way of Adama admitting he was right, and then Adama being honest with her about Earth. And he doesn't have to be truthful with her, but she immediately uses it for political gain. And she says, I'll keep your little secret, but you have to allow us to set up a functioning government, and I will be the president, you know, and you will be basically beholden to me. Dom is like, I'll think about it. And the idea is that, you know, she will run the government, but all matters of military strategy and military command will rest with Adama. So again, we're setting up the series and some of the hinges that some of the drama will pivot around. We are walking down a corridor in Galactica with Baltar and, you know, Six. And we get the information that there are also, not only are there Cylons that look like humans who are aware they're Cylons, they are Cylon sleeper agents that think they're human. They don't even know they're Cylons. So again, that's a setup for the show to come. It's another line for the writers to explore. Then we see this wonderful montage with this great music, and we see Ty in his cabin. He throws this liquor bottle in the basket, and we see Boxy kind of walking into his new home tentatively and being encouraged to sit down and have a cookie. Starbuck and her rack lighting a cigar and, you know, looking at a picture of Hurley and Zach. We're in Adama's quarters. Apollo's about, he wants to reconcile, and Adama gently says, now's not the right moment, Apollo, but you realize that they're kind of approaching reconciliation. And we get this montage of a lot of little moments, you know, a lot of some of the deck crew doing little things, like just very human little moments of going on about the ship, about the humans going about their business. And the end of it, Adama gets a printed message in his ship that simply says there are only 12 Cylon models. Ostensibly put there by Baltar, we don't know. And then the very end, we are on the Ragnar anchorage. We see Aaron Doral, who they left there, and he's not looking too good. A group of skin job Cylons arrive, and there are multiple models of Six. There are multiple models of Leoban, and there are other Dorals. And immediately Doral knows that, you know, we get the sense that, of course, he's a Cylon, and he knew it all along. So here's a big plot problem that I have. It's a little weird. It's the only time really when heavy duty coincidence plays a part in the story, but it's just, it's an odd thing that Baltar would choose him and fault, you know, make believe, you know, use him as a patsy and sort of that, oh yeah, it's this guy and I can, you know, falsify the test to prove that he was a Cylon when he didn't even do a test. And then that this guy actually does turn out to be a Cylon. Like, there's something about that I didn't like. It threw a twist in the story that I didn't think needed to be there, you know? So I'm not a big fan of that coincidence. It's just because, you know, the show is turning on a lot of different places and you're just like, so what does that mean? Is there, and I don't think that, you know, you need to go there in that extra level. So not a big fan of that last moment. However, you know, there's yet another tweak, and at the very end, another model of the character Boomer walks in. And then, you know, big revelation for the audience that, oh my God, Boomer is actually a sleeper Cylon, doesn't even know she's one. Or does she, you know? And at the very end, we hear the words, by your command, little sop to us original series folks, and we fade to black. And so that ends the Battlestar Galactica miniseries. And I think in terms of writing and character development and acting and how this the whole thing was shot, it's one of the greatest pieces of sci-fi visual media ever put up, I think. I think, you know, films have other fish to fry and they can do a lot of other things good, but somehow this miniseries was able to do visuals as good as any film that I've seen. You know, character and writing better than most, you know, that you see. They were allowed to make the show really very adult. And although it's dealing with a fantastic situation of humans possibly in other galaxies and, you know, something that used to, you know, that came from the pulps and has resided in fantasy for so long, there's absolutely no reason why it cannot be treated with the seriousness that Moore treats it. And I think one of the most adult pieces of science fiction to ever, you know, surface on a screen anywhere. It's brilliant. The series, I think they went for 4 seasons, and they did some spin-off movies, one called Razor. They did actually a really terrific prequel movie called Blood and Chrome, which chronicles young Adama's time in the Colonial Fleet during the First War. And it's a terrific little movie in itself, and I think I may cover it in a future podcast because it's a solid film. I was really impressed with it. There's a film called The Plan, which gives you sort of the events of the miniseries and other parts of the show from the Cylon's perspective, and it came out after the show was over. So there's a lot of Galactica. I'm probably not going to review the series on this podcast only because the series is wildly uneven. There's a lot of really good writing in it, but there's also a lot of very bad writing and a lot of reliance on who or who is not a Cylon. The amount of mileage they get from this one plot device of, you know, who's a Cylon, who's not a Cylon, who knows they're a Cylon, who doesn't know they're a Cylon. And the continual appearance of Six in Baltar's awareness, it gets, for me, gets so old. I think the show suffers a lot when it relies on those tropes, but there are a lot of really, really terrific episodes in the 4 seasons, and I thought it ended incredibly well. I know most people who watched the show did not like the ending. I thought it the only way it really could end was an incredible coda to the whole show. There's also Richard Hatch makes an appearance as a character named Tom Zarek, I think in the 2nd season, maybe the 1st, I don't remember. So there's a little original series, Easter egg-y kind of thing, which is kind of great. If you like the miniseries, I would suggest, you know, giving the, I think the entire 4 seasons, the 3rd season is probably the weakest, but I think that the show deserves to be screened. I don't know that I'll watch it again anytime soon. Because, you know, once you know, like, all of the Cylon tropes, as I discovered recently when I went back to try to watch it, once you know who is a Cylon and who isn't a Cylon and the disposition of everyone, the show becomes very, very, very bad. It becomes very trite to watch. And the devices that the show is using, you know, when you're not kind of beheld by, oh my God, is Adama a Cylon? Oh no, is Laura a Cylon? When that's all dispensed with in your head, you realize that how much of the show is really jury-rigged in a lot of ways. So, yeah, but, you know, really so much of the show is also very good. There's some beautiful episodes, and as a whole, I think it stands pretty strong, you know, as a TV science fiction on screen. And so that's where we're going to end, and thanks very much for listening to this edition of Sci-Fi on Screen as we wrapped up Galactica miniseries. You can find us at scifionscreen.com. We're also on iTunes. We are on Facebook. We are everywhere you want to be. And I hope you enjoyed this. I enjoyed making it. And I'll see you next time.